Please note disclaimers at end of show.
Welcome to Creating Wealth with Jason Hartman. During this program, Jason is going to tell you some really exciting things that you probably haven't thought of before, and a new slant on investing. Fresh new approaches to America's best investment that will enable you to create more wealth and happiness than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine, self-made multimillionaire who not only talks the talk, but walks the walk. He's been a successful investor for 20 years and currently owns properties in 11 states and 17 cities. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to financial freedom. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is episode number 149, and this is your host, Jason Hartman. Today, we've got an exciting show with, well, gosh, it's hard to title this guy because he's got quite a few titles, but it's Frank McKinney. He is a very interesting guy, an upscale real estate developer, building incredible mansions and creating all kinds of value where really there was none before, kind of out of thin air. You'll like this show from many perspectives. It's really not necessarily a real estate show, although we're going to touch on that, but it's about marketing, spiritual growth, and philanthropy, all kinds of great things, motivation, just some neat stuff. We're going to cover quite a wide range of topics with Frank today. And before we do that, our next show has Dr. Dennis Whately, one of my all-time favorite mentors, where we'll talk about the psychology of winning and the seeds of greatness. And I discovered Dr. Whately at age 17, and he really did change my life. So I think you'll like that show. That's one of our every 10th shows that's on a totally non-financial topic. But as I always say, it always relates to finances in some ways. We are moving into our new office tomorrow, so I'm very, very excited. They finished putting down the carpeting today and just getting the final touches on it. It's real exciting. And you know what? I'll post a picture of that probably on our website. And it has a huge conference or sort of seminar training room. Maybe we'll have some events there coming up soon. And speaking of events, our next Creating Wealth in Today's Economy Boot Camp is on February 20th. That's a Saturday, February 20th. Register at JasonHartman.com. And the Masters Weekend, of course, March 6th and 7th. We're going to do one day on real estate and finance, where we'll have asset protection and all kinds of gurus on that subject, area managers, property managers, etc. And then we will do a second day, the Sunday, which will be more focused on internet marketing, growing a home-based business or a small to medium-sized business. And I think you'll really like this Masters Weekend. It's the first one we've done this way, so it's real special. In one weekend, you're going to learn all about creating wealth through real estate and creating income through a side business that may well grow into be a big business for you. So that's it. Let's go to the interview with real estate artist, marketing guru, and philanthropist and motivational guy, Frank McKinney. Here's the interview. It's my pleasure to welcome Frank McKinney to the show. He is a real high-end marketing genius. He has got a tremendous rags-to-riches story. He's going to talk today about bubbles and timing cycles in the market, and also about that very important spiritual and mental mindset that can lead to success or failure in business and in real estate. And he's just a really, really interesting guy. I've heard him interviewed before on other shows, and really want to welcome Frank McKinney to our show today. Frank, thanks for joining us.
Fantastic opportunity to be here, Jason. I know some of the guests that you've had, and I know you're heard around the world, so I'm honored to be sitting on the same stage.
Well, we're honored to have you.
The stage we're sitting on, by the way, for those who are tuning in, I am talking to Jason from my oceanfront treehouse office. This is where I've written all my books from, 5 books, and where I design all of our oceanfront homes from. And so it's a beautiful setting. It's 23 feet above sea level. So for those of you who are listening in a place that's cold and dreary, just think of me sitting up here looking out over the Atlantic Ocean.
You're making our listeners very envious there, Frank. But you've got a tremendous story, and congratulations on your success. You have taken and built such a phenomenal reputation for really creating a whole sort of image and a persona that markets these really, really high-end properties. And right now, you are close to selling, I believe, the most expensive green or environmentally friendly home in the world, right?
Yeah, let's delineate a little bit for your listeners. I'm the creator of these magnificent, one-of-a-kind oceanfront homes, really artistry that can be found on that sun-drenched canvas known as the Atlantic Ocean. And I do it, Jason, all on speculation. So that's my risk, my dollars at risk there. I have no partners. It's me, the bank, and the IRS. So I've been at it now since 1986, starting back then with a $50,000 fixer-upper in a pretty bad part of town down here in West Palm Beach, Florida. And now, you know, almost 23 years later, we just finished, again, on speculation in a market like this, the largest at over 15,000 square feet and the most opulent at over $29 million home that's been certified, triple certified green by the United States Green Building Council, the Florida Green Building Coalition, and also Energy Star for Homes. And so I think what's great for your listeners to tune into is, okay, so wow, you know, Frank, you're taking this huge risk. Again, I'm building on speculation. For those of you who don't know, I am building, I've been creating these houses for all these years without knowing when I'm going to get paid. There is no buyer in mind, no buyer waiting, I should say, when we're finished with these homes. So kind of like the Field of Dreams, you know, build it and they will come. And that's what I'm hoping here. Or that's what I'm believing. I have believed it for nearly 25 years. And so the most important thing that I've become familiar with, that I have embraced, I can't say that I've mastered it, Jason, but that is this exercising of one's risk tolerance, one's risk threshold, exercising that risk threshold like a muscle. You know, eventually it does become stronger and able to withstand greater pressure. So for the common man that says, well, how in the world can you take a, you know, this risk in this economy, building a 15,000 square foot, $29 million home on speculation without a buyer? And the answer is quite simple. You know, I didn't start with a $29 million house. I started with a $50,000 fixer upper. I see you've interviewed some great people, and one of my favorite authors is the author of Blink.
Oh, Blink, Malcolm Gladwell, sure.
Malcolm Gladwell, sorry, I drew a blank there. Malcolm Gladwell, and in Blink and The Tipping Point, and his new book,
Outliers, I think. That's the last one.
And Outliers, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, and Outliers, he says you have to do, to become an expert at anything, but Gladwell says, you must apply it yourself for 10,000 hours.
Right.
And if you do the math, that's 5 years of a career. And really, for the first 5 years of my career, I didn't do a house worth more than $100,000, Jason.
So you were just doing little cheap fixer-uppers. That's an amazing start.
Taking it to the bank day in and day out, taking my lunch pail to work day in and day out, nothing flashy, you know, not overindulging in debt, not overindulging in lifestyle, not charging it today and paying for it never. I live a very disciplined life. I kind of sacrifice today for a better tomorrow. And now, you know, turning the page 23 years later, we're able to take what is perceived as being enormous risk because we took so many smaller risks many, many years ago.
That's fantastic, Frank. So tell the listeners, if you would, when you went from that first 5 years, or as Gladwell puts it, the 10,000 hours that you put in, and for most entrepreneurs, they probably do the 10,000 hours in about 2.5 or 3 years, I would say, because they love what they do and they're working all the time. But work is really play for someone who has passion about it. But in that first 5 years, what was the jump? How did you suddenly go from $100,000 fixer-upper houses that you were buying and selling on into the next, what was the next move up, and how did that occur?
You know, here's how it evolved, and I want the listeners to pay very close attention to the fact that when I was doing those smaller homes, Jason, I wasn't longing for something more. I was very content with creating and building these little first-time home buyer homes. I basically was taking people who were renting the American dream, and I was teaching them how to own it for the first time. And what a wonderful way to be in business, to teach people how to own the American dream, and then to provide them with a piece of the American dream. And after 5 years of getting really good at it, and we were doing 20 or 30 houses a year and doing quite well, you know, had nice margins on our little sales, I turned to my wife and I said, honey, you know, we're pretty good at this. I get this. I am now seeking a greater challenge. I don't want to deviate outside of my niche as far as the real estate market, but let's simply add a zero. Let's simply add one zero to the acquisition. So if I was buying houses for $75,000 and selling them for $100, let's buy one for $750,000. Let's fix it up and let's sell it instead of for $1 million. Let's sell it for $2 million. Let's create a $1 million margin. And I felt after hundreds of smaller transactions that this was a natural progression. And when you step back and look at it, it was the same application, Jason. It just was on the ocean instead of in a burgeoning or struggling neighborhood. And it was just 1-0. And that's all I did is I built up a decent savings, and I didn't over leverage, so it was easy for me to go to the bank and borrow the money I needed to complete the project, because I put a lot of my own money where my mouth was. I didn't believe in other people's money. Matter of fact, there's a long chapter in my new book, Burst This, that talks about it's titled, as a matter of fact, the most obscene four-letter word. And it's not the F word or the S word. It's the D word. It's the debt word. And because I managed my debt very well, I was able to take on that first project as this. It was kind of both evolutionary and revolutionary as far as me making that big jump. I didn't jump from a $100,000 house to a $200,000 or a $300,000. I jumped from a $100,000 house to a $2 million house because I felt I'd cut my teeth, I'd walked the walk, and I felt that I was ready.
That's great. So, Frank, where did you go after $2 million? Did you do several of those and get kind of comfortable playing in that pond and then go up to $5 million, $10 million? I mean, was it just sort of that progression like that?
The first house we did, the $2.2 million house that we did, Jason, was in 1991. And since 91, we have done 36 homes on the direct ocean front, 36 projects, 36 properties. So that's more or less two a year. And we very slowly went from two to four, and then 6.5, I remember, then an eight. And then we cut through or broke through that $10 million barrier back in 1996. And then we continued to slowly but surely escalate up to where the most expensive one we've done was a $50 million house back in 2004. And so we've kind of bounced back and forth between we haven't gone below $7 million since that very first project, with the average price of a home that we've done being around $15 million. The interesting thing, and the longest chapter in my new book, Burst This, and we're going to talk about the thesis behind this book.
Right, I'm going to ask you about that in just a moment, but go ahead.
But the longest chapter is the marketing chapter. And so how is it, Frank, that now I'm selling to an infinitesimally small percentage of people that can afford my artistry, and we're talking about 25 to 30,000 people out of a worldwide population of 6.5 billion that can afford what we do for a living. And so we have become very keen on our ability to, as you referenced in the introduction, to brand our homes. I will tell you that I'm not a builder, I'm not a developer, I'm not a flipper, I'm not a rehabber, I'm not a contractor, I'm not a wholesaler. I'm an artist, plain and simple. And the artistry that I create is the type that people can live in. I mean, Van Gogh, Renoir, Monet, you can hang them on your wall, but a Frank McKinney home is unlike anything you've ever seen before. You get an emotional return from living in the art, and most often, Jason, our buyers, our owners that end up selling their house after whatever, 5-6 years, they get a financial return and end up making more money selling the house than I did selling it to them. So it's important for the proprietor, the entrepreneur, almost regardless of field, to consider themselves like an artist approaches his craft. It's kept it fresh for me for all these years, and it really has created a brand that people long for.
That's fantastic. Well, Frank, you've got two great books. They're both out this year. First, I want to ask you about Burst This, which is about bubbles, Frank McKinney's bubble-proof real estate strategies. And then I want to ask you about your more spiritual book entitled The Tap. So tell us a bit more about Burst This. I mean, you say that people, they create their own bubbles. First, maybe the market cycle thing that you've studied, and then how people do it psychologically, right?
Yeah, here's why I decided to write this book. I had written two other books before, Make It Big, 49 Secrets for Building a Life of Extreme Success, which was a kind of philosophical book with real estate anecdotes sprinkled throughout. The second book was Frank McKinney's Maverick Approach to Real Estate Success, and that was a kind of a 20-year ride from the very first property through the first 20 years of my career. Burst This was born from my just disdain and growing tired of hearing about the bubble and the negativity surrounding the real estate market. And so what I did is I went back and I studied six distinct real estate cycles that took place over the last 35 years where my mission was to sift out this kind of critical, the recurring trends, that highlight when significant opportunities are going to present themselves, while more importantly, signaling where history is going to repeat itself. And these cycles, how long do they last? What brings them on? and ultimately what to look for when we're about to come out of one, which we are right now. That was one of the most, and I just began to think, you know what, as I studied, listen, I went through four of those six cycles. The other two I didn't go through because I wasn't in the business. I was too young. And I did very well in some of these cycles because I didn't buy into the bubble mentality. I didn't over leverage. I created my own market. I created my own brand. I wasn't a lemming with, you know, I took a contrarian approach. As a matter of fact, the whole first section talks about the importance of being a confident contrarian. And really the book, now I think it's refreshing because there are a lot of books out there. I think you've interviewed some authors that kind of predicted the crash and talk about how bad it's going to be. And I believe, that's fine, we've seen that happen, but how do you bubble-proof your real estate portfolio? How do you take advantage of these cycles? And how truly are most bubbles self-created, just like most opportunities are self-created?
So how is that?
Well, first of all, when I look to make money in real estate, I go in the opposite direction of the old tried and true location, location, location. And I know that sounds crazy, but hey, if you want to buy a home and be comfortable and live in a nice neighborhood and nice schools and all that, that's great. Follow it. If you want to have a nice vacation home, follow the location, location. But when I look back over hundreds of transactions, the time I made the most money, the times I made the most money were when I went in that opposite direction. And I went into neighborhoods that people wouldn't go into, or on the oceanfront. You know, I have never done a project in the town of Palm Beach. I've done plenty in Delray Beach. I've done them in Manalapan. I've done them in Gulfstream. I've done them in Ocean Ridge. You've probably never heard of those towns. You've heard of Palm Beach. You've heard of Boca Raton. Those towns that I just referenced are right in between. So I'm a firm believer in going and making a market where it hadn't been made before.
Now, so the question that kind of begs in my thinking, though, is that you have the power to do that because you were such a big force. I mean, you were either doing a large number of transactions or you were doing a few really high-end transactions. And that is, of course, risky what you did, I would say. But is that possible for the small investor who just wants to buy one or two houses?
Listen, I bought one or two houses for the first 3 or 4 years, Jason.
Okay.
I mean, that's all. I never look to the next deal. I'm so hyper-consumed with the one I'm working on. That's why, hey, listen, over, what is that, 18 years, I've only done 36 transactions. That's only two a year.
Wow,
I mean,
that's amazing.
Lot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but the dollars were big, but I'm a firm believer in carving your niche a little wider and a little deeper than most, but staying within that niche, and don't be distracted or deviated outside, or be tempted to deviate outside. And so in times like we're in now, these are the millionaire maker days. These are the low-hanging fruit days. And as Buffett says, you know, when everybody's afraid, it's time to be greedy. And everybody's greedy, it's time to be afraid. Well, look at, you know, he's putting his money where his mouth is. Just last week, he bought Burlington Northern Railway for $34 billion. And if you look, you know, you look at people that this is the time to embrace the opportunities, i.e. the risks that are out there, because you'll be handsomely rewarded. That's what Burstis talks about.
I couldn't agree more, Frank. I think that, of course, you need to be careful always and you need to be prudent, but these are the times in these quote-unquote bad economies where the opportunities are just so, so present, whereas in good times, it's just really hard to find an opportunity. When the market is booming, everyone has picked the first 10 levels of low-hanging fruit, and now there's a lot of low-hanging fruit out there. As long as someone does the plan and does it correctly, a lot of opportunities. And a corollary to that Warren Buffett saying is J. Paul Getty's, buy when everybody's selling, sell when everybody's buying. So would you consider yourself a bit of a contrarian then?
That's the first part of a four-part book. Part number one, if I think you have your book right there, you open it, The Confident Contrarian.
Right.
And that takes some intestinal fortitude. But once you practice it, and you sensitize yourself to the trend that is upon us, and you see it for what it is, and you have the belief, the hope, and the faith that your decision to say yes more than no to opportunities that are out there are going to pay dividends, not immediately. That's why there's a chapter in the other book we're going to talk about that talks about over-spreadsheeting your life. And one of the negatives of the information society that we live in, Jason, is this over-researching, this over-Googling, this just, you know, just let's don't spreadsheet your life to death. Because what people do, and especially in scary times, And mind you, the media has created times that are scarier now than they actually appear, or they appear scarier than they actually are. Believe me, that is something why I advocate you creating your own reality, and not following, you know, following that media created frenzy, the fear that's out there. But here's what you're doing. Here's what you're doing when you do that. You are psychologically, subliminally, looking for a way or a reason to say no. That's what you're doing. Here's the problem with the information that's out there, Jason. You'll find the reason. You will find the reason, and you'll say, there it is. I found it. So, nope, we're not going to do that project. Let's just go ahead and sit in the cubicle the rest of our lives
right.
And play the 9-to-5 game.
Yeah, that's really sad. And you know what that reminds me of, Frank? And I can't remember the title of the movie. Well, maybe it was called Yes Man. I'm not sure if you saw it with Jim Carrey, wasn't it?
You know
what really blew my mind about that little comedic movie is that it just amazes me. So many of my friends and so many clients that I interact with, they're so consumed with saying no to things, where if they would just say yes, yeah, things might go wrong, but just get out of your comfort zone. And when he had to just say yes to everything, look at the sort of opportunities that opened up in his life. I mean, the road was windy a little bit, and at first it may have seemed like, oh, saying yes was the dumb thing. But ultimately, a lot of things really work out by just saying yes to them.
I have a couple of shorter chapters in the Burst This book that talks about celebrating each humble victory as a triumphant achievement. What does that do? I mean, small, humble victories, not you know, the asking your wife to marry you when she says yes, or having your first child, or doing your first mega real estate deal. Small, little, humble victories, and considering them triumphant achievements, because what that does, Jason, is it builds confidence. And when we have confidence, we will say yes more than no. When we say yes more than no, what are we doing? We're exercising our risk tolerance, like that muscle. Eventually it becomes stronger and is able to withstand greater pressure.
And we're getting out of our comfort zone. Very good advice, Frank. Anything else on Burst This before we talk about the TAP?
Well, I think that it's a very, very timely book. It was supposed to be a book that was 250 pages long. It's over 376 pages because I really went deep into these cycles, so that you can use this anecdotally as a guide and a compass when it comes to either buying your first investment property, stepping up your margins, if you will, or even buying your first home.
Tell us about the TAP. Here you get more into the spiritual and the psychological side of success in life and success in real estate, too. What's it all about?
Well, you know, you can apply all the platforms and the suggestions in the Burst This book, or some of the other guests that you've interviewed that have all these wonderful nuggets, wisdom nuggets of success. And then at the end of the day, you know, what's it all for? And I went to 4 high schools in 4 years, and it wasn't because my father was in the military. I was asked to leave every single one of them. I came out with a 1.8 GPA and didn't have the benefit of pursuing a formal education. Came down to Florida with a $50 bill and started digging sand traps on a golf course by hand. And here, so many years later, we're this real estate artist and building these beautiful homes. Why? And I went back and studied. And I studied my mentors, you know, people I look up to. And I came away with a very, very interesting conclusion. If you look at the cover of the book, The TAP, it is the hand of God coming down from the Sistine Chapel, and instead of touching Adam's finger like it does in the painting, Michelangelo's painting, it's touching you on the shoulder. And in The TAP, Jason, I expand upon a wonderful life mantra. Regardless of your religious preference, or even if you have one, There's a great passage from the Gospel of Luke 12:48 that says, in paraphrasing it, to whom much is entrusted, much will be expected. And so why is it that certain people's prayers for more, and let's face it, if you pray, you do pray some form of prayer for more wealth, health, happiness, love, peace, relationships for somebody you love or yourself. And I was curious, why are my mentors, like people I look up to that seem to have it all, why were they having their prayers for more answered when mine were going unanswered or taking forever to be answered? And the reason became very clear to me. God rewards responsible stewards. Those who are responsible for the blessings that they've been given, time, talent, and treasure blessings that they have, and are responsible enough to share those with those less fortunate who hadn't succeeded at their level, those are the ones who had the prayer for more answered. So, you know, I contend. And I you know, prove it in the book. And this, the book is for those who want to succeed in the business of life, okay? And that's the most important business that we're in. You can't succeed in business and fail in your personal life. You can't live that double life. It doesn't last. That's the flash and the pan variety of success. And so in the TAP, I teach the reader how to sensitize themselves to what I refer to as life's great TAP moments, when God does come down, lay his finger on your shoulder and say, Jason, I'm calling you to more. But here's the conditions of this certain TAP. And it's not all about filling Jason's garage with more cars or his closet with more clothes or his refrigerator with more food. It's about taking some of the blessings that he's been given and sharing them with those less fortunate.
Very good thinking. So being a responsible steward and just remembering that we don't really own anything. We're entrusted with this money, this wealth, for a certain amount of time between the bookends of life, and we're not taking it with us. So we got to make it work and make it productive in the world and do good with it. Money's just a tool, isn't it? It's just something that we can use for either good or bad. We can hoard it, we can be selfish with it, or we can do kind of like what Mae West says, money is like manure. It doesn't do anybody any good until you spread it around a bit, right?
Well, like you know, if you could, and for those who are unbelievers, no intention to threaten you or disrespect you, but let's assume if you're listening and if you believe in God and you could play God, wouldn't it make sense that you rewarded those who were responsible with the blessings they already have? And when I mean responsible, I don't mean responsible by putting it on your mattress or keeping it in a safe deposit box. And I'm not referring just to material goods and blessings. Hey, listen, when I've run a charity now since 1998 called the Caring House Project Foundation, and we build self-sustaining villages in the world's most poor and desperate countries, like right now our primary country of focus is Haiti, which is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. I've built 8 self-sufficient villages which in Haiti that combine orphanages and schools and clinics and community centers and churches and renewable food and clean drinking water and houses, all in a campus-like setting. But that's okay, so I'm using my treasure responsibly, but I'll tell you what, rewind to 1998, when the only thing I was doing with my philanthropic self was I was feeding the homeless out of the back of a beat-up old van as a volunteer 1 hour a week. And that's all I had. I didn't have the treasure. I didn't even have the talent. I had the time. And so that's what I did. I signed up to serve meals one night a week, Jason, out of the back of a van going to the streets. And eventually I saw the impact I was having, the little impact I was having. And I began to develop the talent for fixing houses. And so I went out and I used to fix up houses for people who were like an elderly woman who was incapacitated, an invalid or shut in. And we would go up and straighten her mailbox or put on a new roof for her, or some talent that I could share. And I said, wow, we're getting good at that. And God saw us as responsible stewards for that blessing. And then the treasure started to come, and we didn't stop. We started domestically by providing elderly homeless people with shelter for $1 a month. I used to rent houses for, as a matter of fact, I still have a few that we rent for $1 a month. And then I saw how good that was going. Then we said, let's go to the countries that don't have the social service net. And so if you go to our website, you can see not only the beautiful houses we refer to, these beautiful homes on the ocean, but you can take a tour of some of the villages that we've built overseas. So, you know, that's what I'm encouraging the reader to do, is we all want to succeed. But if you want to succeed, lifelong succeed in that business of life, try to focus a little bit on that to whom much is entrusted, much will be expected. And you'll be shocked at how quickly you sensitize yourself to these great TAP moments and start to feel really good about sharing those time, talent, and treasure.
I'd have to say that it reminds me, Frank, of what Og Mandino says, is he says in his sort of prayer, if you will, called The Seeds of Success, which I just love so much. And he says, God, I realize that you always try me with a little first to see what I would do with a lot. And that's the key. And Tony Robbins says that when you give, it sets up your subconscious mind to know that there is more and that there is abundance and more is created out of that. So I couldn't agree with you more with what you're saying here. It's very true. So what else is the TAP about? Is that really the core of it?
That would be the core. I would tell you that if you, even if you've experienced a little bit of success and you think, you know what, this is, I'm feeling kind of empty. You know, I don't know after all this work is this all there is? I mean, I've worked my whole life for this, but hey, Jason, I've sold to people like that. I've sold multi-million dollar houses to people that just had all the financial success in the world, were miserably unhappy people. And so the TAP says, hey, you know what? This opens up a whole other side for life. And I talk about the seven stages of feeling the TAP, of sensitizing yourself to these great TAP moments. We're in tough times now, right? We all agree we're in tough times. We don't have to repeat that. But if you had a dime for everybody, every time somebody said, or I did, they're saying, hey, Frank, when are we going to get out of this mess? How am I going to get out from underneath my debt? When's this country going to get out from underneath the mortgage mess? You notice how many times I said the word get? We're not going to get out of anything. We're going to give our way out. And to do that, you have to sensitize and feel these seven stages. And I'm going to go through them very quickly and see what stage you're at of feeling the TAP. Well, number one is no comprehension, no sensitivity to, no understanding for that concept of sharing. I mean, it's not even on the radar. Step two says, I understand it, but I ain't doing it. It's not for me. That's for some other do-gooder. Stage three says, you know what? I get it, and I'm going to share, but I'm going to do it begrudgingly. I'm an usher at a 7 a.m. mass. I'll give you a visual. I pass the collection plate around, and there's those people who take that dollar bill, and they crunch it up so small, it's, you know, about the size of a quarter, and they dive it into the collection basket so I can't see the denomination. And they've got a scowl on their face. So I'll give, but I hate doing it. Number stage four says, you know what, I'm going to give, but I'm going to make sure everybody's watching. So take a look at me, everybody. I want to be recognized. I want to be in the program. I want to be on the brochure. So I'll give, but only when I'm being looked at. Stage five says, I'll give, but only when the getting's good. Only when I'm doing well will I share my blessings. And stage six is a pretty big breakthrough. That's where, in stage seven as well, that's where it becomes a fabric, the part of your life, part of your business plan, Jason. So there's a reason I build these big houses. It's so I can build a lot of small ones over in Haiti. When you get to that stage, you really, really make this significant breakthrough in life.
Yeah, and doing this work also keeps your eye focused on gratitude. And I think gratitude is one of the key elements of success in people, in that people that are grateful for what they have, whether it be a little or a lot, and that's always a moving target for all of us, regardless of what size game we're playing. But people that are grateful just seem to be better adjusted people. They just seem to be happier. They're much more appreciative, for sure. And it's not really... You can be kind of constructively discontent, but grateful at the same time. Those are different concepts. I don't know exactly how to explain them, but they are different. And I think in doing this type of work, it keeps us focused on being grateful and keeps us in touch with what other people are up to and where they are in their lives, so that we have a perspective. Some people kind of lose that perspective, don't they? They just hang around with their small circle of people, and they kind of don't know what else is going on in the world, do they?
No, and there's a great chapter in the TAP that is titled, Often Happy, Seldom Satisfied.
Yeah.
Okay, just
that's a good
what point. You said. I'm happy a lot of the times, but you know what? Be it professionally or philanthropically, I'm not ever satisfied. And the day I become satisfied is the day that if you're working for me, you ought to probably go look for another job, because I've kind of lost the fire. And you know, there's your friend and mine, John Assaraf, and others who are part of The Secret. Well, I love the concept of affirmation and attraction, positive thinking. There was a core concept that was missing from The Secret, and that was this belief that if you sat on a cushion and crossed your legs and got in kind of the lotus position and hummed a little bit, that a BMW was going to fall down your chimney. and I felt there was some. It was a very materialistic approach,
right?
And for those who want those things, those goodies, so to speak, you can't learn The Secret until you've been tapped. You really can't feel the full effect of those that affirmation and attraction until you've been tapped, until you understand it's not about the I and the me, Jason. It's more about the you and the we.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Frank, we so much appreciate you coming on and sharing some of this great insight with us and your busy schedule. What would you say to wrap this all up for people?
Well, let's have them go to a pretty interactive website that we've got, if they have the time, which is just my name, frank-mckinney.com. And there, Jason, you can see and learn a little bit more about the books we just talked about, or actually all five of the books that are written. You can take the tour of this new Aquiliana, which is the $29 million home that we just finished, the green home, built on speculation. By the way, these houses are furnished down to the gold plate, the toothbrush in the bathroom, linens on the beds, and towels in the closet. So you'll see a stunning home if you went to tour that. And just remember that, you know, if you're in the real estate business, the bubbles, I believe, are self-created. To be responsible with your debt, and certainly learn more from the Burst This book. And please, you know, if you only had $20 to spend, I would encourage you to read The Tap and to feel that that wonderful passage, "To whom much is entrusted, much will be expected," working through your life.
That's awesome. Well, that's a good way to leave it. Frank McKinney, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate having you on.
Thank you, Jason.
Good morning, everyone.
There's never been a better chance to learn what you need to know to achieve financial independence. And it happens over the course of two powerhouse days, every spring and every fall, with a panel of 16 vibrant, intellectually motivated, and I'll say it, slightly obsessed with real estate experts leading the way. There's a good chance you'll be sad to see it end.
This is the Masters Weekend, a gathering of experts, where we fly in experts from all over the country. We have guests here today from as far away as North Carolina and Colorado, and then we have experts flying in from many states all over the USA.
Probably the most interesting thing that I've learned so far is about the 1031 exchanges. I thought that was an excellent presentation, answered questions I didn't really even know I had.
And yes, we are planning to invest with Platinum Properties, and probably in the GO zone, but perhaps not exclusively. And we were greatly impressed today with the surroundings and the glamour and the style, but also the information.
And Karam and Sarah and all the folks here at Platinum have helped us tremendously. So I think we're on the road to success.
Don't wait to buy real estate, and then wait.
The Masters Weekend is a twice-yearly special event, so don't wait another 6 months to learn the skills that could make you financially independent. Space is limited, so your immediate registration guarantees a seat in the room at Platinum Properties Investor Network with Jason Hartman and our gathering of experts.
Copyright the Hartman Media Company. For publication rights and interviews, please email media@jasonhartman.com. This show offers very general information concerning real estate for investment purposes. Opinions of guests are their own. Jason Hartman is acting as president of Platinum Properties Investor Network exclusively. Nothing contained herein should be considered personalized, personal, financial, investment, legal, or tax advice. Every investor's strategy and goals are unique. You should consult with a licensed real estate broker or agent or other licensed investment, tax, and/or legal advisor before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed. Please call 714-820-4200 and visit www.jasonhartman.com for additional disclaimers, disclosures, and questions.